Well, hi there. This is David Wilcock, and we're here with a Divine Cosmos audio blog. And in fact, this is the first time that I'm introducing you to my colleague and friend, Larry Sire. We are actually in Larry's recording studio. This is Electric Larryland Studios here in Austin, Texas. And I've been here ever since I got back from the Dowsing Conference. So the reason why I haven't been updating the site is that it's been a three-week chunk of time that I carved away, first to go do the Dowsing Conference, and then to come here and work on my first vocal music album. And this means that we're doing a sequel to our original series, which was called The Science of Peace, which is available on divinecosmos.com, and talks about consciousness science, the idea that the mind is not just something that's isolated within your own brain. It may not even be directly related to the brain at all, except that the body acts as an antenna for this consciousness field, which actually interconnects all of us together. So I met Larry about 1 month before I went to LA and did a conference wherein I met Billy Blake, who in turn got me the idea of doing all of this stuff as a movie. And for the first 2 years after we did the Science of Peace series, which is the equivalent of three CDs worth of voice and music in the background, we did not release this content. So what happened was we had legal issues with the film because it was too similar in content to what the film was going to be doing. And we were able to get those issues cleared up as the script matured and we figured out that we were dealing with something that was more of a drama rather than a documentary. That allowed us to be able to release the valuable information that was in Science of Peace, which has changed many people's lives because you essentially have a very eclectic soundtrack going in the background, executed, if I may say so, at a very high level of quality. Anyway, we decided to do something a little different this time, so we are actually working on vocal music. I'm the lead singer, and Larry is the background singer. And Larry, I know people haven't had a chance to meet you before, so why don't you introduce yourself and tell everybody a little bit about your background and why you qualify to be doing what you're doing in this world?
Well, I've been a musician all my life. Matter of fact, I've been playing music so long, I don't remember a time when I was not playing. I started around the age of four playing guitar and keyboards, and I'm 56 now, so that puts me a little over 50 years playing music.
Wow.
So I've been engineering and producing records for about 36 years, so and worked with hundreds of artists, some of them you heard of, some of them you have not, but they're all listed on my website at larryseyer.com, S-E-Y-E-R.com.
And there are some pretty cool names in there. I mean, we're talking Garth Brooks, George Strait, Huey Lewis in the News, Dixie Chicks, da-da-da-da.
Yeah, there's a wide variety of people I've worked with over the years. Sleep at the Wheel was probably the longest run I had with working with stars of that category. Ray Benson and I worked together for approximately 20 years. Together on lots of different records. So I got to meet a lot of recording artists that I would not have normally got to meet through Ray. So I owe him a lot for him and I working together for those years.
And I know you downplay this, but you won multiple Grammy Awards for mostly recording engineering, right?
Yes, recording engineering and musician and remix engineer. All of the Grammy Awards were with Asleep at the Wheel during that time I was working with them.
I didn't realize that, but that's great. That was one of the things that you said to me when you called me. At the time, I was still doing readings and you were just another client. You called up and said, I'd really like to work on music with you. And back then, I wasn't getting three people a week saying that. But I still got a lot of it and I just didn't ever want to make the time because I so focus on this website. And so what happened was you actually brought to the table not only this statement that you had won 9 Grammy Awards and that you were a professional musician, which definitely perked my interest, but you also had a background in sort of like a sister series of material to the Law of One called The Course in Miracles. So why don't you talk a little bit about that? Because you are actually doing a weekly audio blog on your own website where you talk about the Course and how it's affected your life. So how did that all start for you? And did you always have a metaphysical perspective or did it kind of evolve over time? How did all that happen?
No, I didn't always have a metaphysical background. As a matter of fact, I was raised strict German Catholic. Went to Catholic grade school, and then it was a small little community of about 1,200 people, and most of the people there in the community were Catholics. But As with what happens with a lot of people as they get older, they rebel and they look at other things and they try to find different paths. They question everything. Is this what truth is? What is truth? And so in my quest, I found a lot of different things that I tried. But in the mid to late 80s, I met some people who introduced me to A Course in Miracles. And they slapped the book on the table in front of me and said, "You need to read this." And I said, "Well, what's this?" So I opened the book up to the introduction and I read, "This is A Course in Miracles. It is a required course. Only the time you take it is voluntary. Free will does not mean that you can establish the curriculum. It means only that you can elect what you want to take at a given time. The course does not aim at teaching the meaning of love, for that is beyond what can be taught. It does aim, however, at removing the blocks to the awareness of love's presence, which is your natural inheritance. The opposite of love is fear, but what is all-encompassing can have no opposite. This course can therefore be summed up very simply in this way: nothing real can be threatened, and nothing unreal exists." And when I read that, it perked my interest so much that I decided to start doing the course and dedicated my life to it, actually. I've been a course student for 20 years now, and I've been teaching A Course in Miracles online, and I post them on my website, and I teach them at...
Where can people get that? Because they might be interested.
LarrySire.com/ACIM for A Course in Miracles, and it's all free. You can subscribe via iTunes or download them directly from the site. And actually, what has happened is by doing the course, I get intuitive prompts. In other words, ideas to do things. And matter of fact, you may not know this, David, but I was prompted to call you. And that's actually what started this whole process, is I got a prompt to call you. I heard you on Art Bell on a show, and I thought, I need to call David. So out of the blue, as you remember, I just called you and I said, "Hey, you don't know me, but here I am, and this is what needs to happen." And that's exactly how you and I came about.
Now, granted, I get about 50 emails a day where people say that I need to do that with them, but the timing was key.
Well, it wasn't me making the decision.
That's true. So we have a wonderful working relationship. In fact, it was almost like two colleagues getting back together. I came to do the Science of Peace series here. We'd only talked on the phone like a week and a half prior, and I just booked a flight and came right out and exactly. We did this. Mm-hmm. The creative chemistry was very good. We came out with this amazing body of work because, I mean, how would you describe the music that we put on the Science of Peace? I'd say it's so eclectic you can't even nail it down.
Well, it was spiritually inspired trance music. That's what I like to call it.
Yeah.
So it puts you in the mode. I remember when we did that, when we recorded that project together, and I remember feeling very holy during that entire time. It felt like a very, I hate to use the word special, but it was holy is the best way to describe it. When we were working together, it was a respectful place for both of us. And that continues today, which I just noticed this week when we started on this project together again here, is that we both seem to respect the other one for their opinions, what their ideas are. Everything is heard. Everything is considered on the table. Nothing is ever slammed down, which is an important characteristic for a partnership when you're doing a collaborative musical project. Because, as you know, it can be an ego-driven thing to where people's feelings get hurt and the process gets stopped because of egos. But fortunately, you and I have not experienced that, and I hope we never, ever experience that, but I don't think we will, as long as we listen to each other and listen to the prompts that are guiding both of us to do what we do, it's going to be right.
Well, I definitely have appreciated the opportunity to bring this work out to the public in such an amazing way. I think that this body of material that we're trying to launch is so vast in scope that it really requires as many different avenues to get out there as possible. And that's why we do so much stuff that's free. There's just too much to try to cram into any one thing. But With the Science of Peace series, we had one way to go about it. And this time we're doing something totally different.
Right.
So I got to admit that I'm just absolutely thrilled with the quality of what we're pulling off here in the studio. I guess at this point we've finished how many? Well, we've finished writing and started to produce about 5 or 6 songs at this point.
Right, right.
Uh-huh. And so the vocal tracks are not completed, but we have scratch vocals down. And we have instrumentals and we have drums and all the different parts of what it's going to actually sound like, at least in some form. And we're actually cranking them out pretty fast. It's been about a song every day and a half or so is how we're averaging it.
Which is really an incredible speed.
Yeah.
Especially given the quality of the music that's actually being written. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, I'm not sure that anybody is going to be able to believe that when we actually put it out, because every song is unique, it's different, and it's also quite high production value, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be first rate.
Well, nobody, you know, we're not going to need to talk about it because we're going to have demos out there and people will decide for themselves whether what we've done is any good or not. So I think there's some questions that have been coming up on the email, and I wanted to address some of those because I know a lot of you out there are concerned about some things that have been happening. And I thought this would be a good time to sort of update you and go into some of this stuff. So first of all, we had a recent conflict that went on between Georgia and Russia over a disputed territory called South Ossetia, which is actually a territory that's right in the middle of a key pipeline for oil that runs through the country of Georgia. And of course, this immediately invokes all the idea of the Grand Chessboard, and that would be the title of Zbigniew Brzezinski's book, talking about geopolitical strategies in order to secure oil supplies. What a lot of people don't seem to understand, unless you read alternative media, is that in this particular instance, the president of Georgia actually initiated a full-scale attack on innocent civilians, bombarding the capital city of South Ossetia. And this is directly after he'd been going through extensive training with Israeli and U.S. military agents who were actually in the country, stationed there, CIA agents, military advisors, etc., as well as weapons caches that had come from, let's say, foreign donors. So then what happens is it was expected that since it was right in the middle of the opening of the Olympic Games and so forth, that Russia would not retaliate. What you find out when you're looking at the tbrnews.org website, which I continue to tell people is the best insider source of information out there right now. This is a guy inside the White House, high-level staff person, who has been singing like a songbird and telling us everything that's going on. And this sort of supplanted another source who was actually working, we now know, for Fox News and then left that job. And he called himself Controlling the News, and he was on TBR News ever since, I guess, 1999 or 2000 or something like that. These two guys have been consistently the most amazingly accurate sources. They've predicted stuff that would come out in the media after it happened, or before it happened, rather. And we've just seen any number of amazing things come through. Now, granted, because these guys are insiders, they both have kind of a cynical, sarcastic attitude. They can say things that are demeaning to other people. So I'm not supporting the way that they express themselves, but what I am saying is that we should always embrace the opportunity to gain information that helps us understand the big picture, what's going on, because there's so many people out there on the net now who are promoting fear and doom and catastrophe, and they always tell you that it's right around the corner, and then it doesn't happen. But that doesn't stop people from believing that it's right around the corner. And Larry, I mean, you've been online ever since there was ARPANET or something, probably, right? I mean, you're a computer geek, so.
A long time. I actually started before the internet was real popular. I ran a bulletin board is what we had.
Oh, my God.
Back when you used to use phone lines to dial in to get into the modem. So.
Dial into your own computer in your own
that's
house.
Right.
Not even a server.
That was 1984.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the internet is really, thank God for the internet. All this information that you're talking about from Georgia, would we even know about it?
Well, we wouldn't have known about it because the media completely reframed the whole thing as if Russia attacked Georgia. And people were believing that. And in fact, the president of Georgia, who just firebombed missiles at the capital of South Ossetia, is out there in the media whining and saying, "Oh my God, an unprovoked attack, and it's genocide and all this stuff." And then they were saying that Russia bombed the pipeline, and that wasn't even a confirmed fact. That was only a rumor at the time, but they were trying to act as if Russia was trying to take over the oil situation and gain control. So it's classic projection, right? It's, you accuse other people of what you're doing.
Right. What do you think is the reasoning behind all of this? What is their reason for doing all this?
Well, it's not that easy to see at first, but you have to understand that we have essentially rival factions that are competing over the same little spot of space. South Ossetia happens to be a country that had declared its independence, and by so doing, they had ceded a key area in which this pipeline needed to go through. Georgia was in allegiance with the U.S. and Israeli forces to be able to hopefully secure, at some point, this area so that the pipeline could be built, which not only would be able to offshore into the Caspian Sea through the shoreline, but also the pipeline could then continue on down into Turkey and other places where it would then be able to be distributed that way.
So you're saying that you think that this conflict is all about oil?
Well, it appears if you read like Sherman Skolnick from cloakanddagger.com, I think that's what the website is called. Skolnick's report. The report is actually called Cloak and Dagger, but the website is skolnicksreport.com. And he's deceased now, but he was another really, really valuable resource while he was alive. You find out that basically every war since oil was discovered and started to be used has been about oil, every single one of them. And there's always been false flag attacks, even like you find out that World War I, the sinking of the Lusitania was a false flag, meaning that it wasn't actually an enemy fire, it was friendly fire, covertly orchestrated in order to start this world war. And everything has been about the control of resources, the control of wealth. And basically, when you control energy, you control who gets to develop. And this has kept this artificial standard where the so-called first world countries have geopolitical superiority as well as financial superiority, because when these third world countries can't develop, they also can't build any wealth which would allow them to be any kind of major competitor on the world scene. So that seems to be what all this stuff is about. And more people are waking up to that. It's not exactly any big surprise.
Well, you just touched on one of the things that I love to do in my spare time, which is research alternative energies.
Yeah, and exactly.
It seems like if we would just get off the oil nipple and get onto some other energy source that would give us an alternative to our supply of energy, that maybe these conflicts would go away, or would they?
Well, I think that you can't say that free energy is the balm that will save the world because, of course, if you read the Casey readings, Atlantis had free energy, and they cranked up the transistor too high and sank their island. So it doesn't necessarily solve everything, but it
would be... You can't fix stupid.
You can't fix stupid. But what you can do is make the situation that we already have a lot better. I really do feel that 2012 is not another year, and we have smoking gun proof that that's what's happening now, because you look at the actual solar system, and this is work that I'm proud enough to say I single-handedly put together the NASA data to make this case. It started out with just material from Russia, beginning in a paper published at the tail end of 1997 by Dr. Alesky Dmitriev. And the paper was actually called Planetophysical State of the Earth and Life, I think. It was some crazy title like that, that you'd never think was anything worth reading. But what it actually is describing is that there is this glow that they found, they meaning the Russian scientists, found at the front end of our solar system. Now, what does that mean? Who cares if there's a glow? Well, here's the deal. The glow has been getting brighter and brighter and brighter since the Russians first started observing it. And they began observing it a lot earlier than NASA ever did, so they have a longer term of data to draw on. Now, you got to imagine somebody walking down the street, and it's really, really windy, And as they are walking down the street, they have to lean into the wind because it's blowing right against them in the direction they need to go. So as they keep walking forward, they're actually pushing their body weight against the pressure of the wind. Now, if you can imagine that that pressure is heat, that's a very common thing because, of course, the more you heat something up, the faster the movement is in the molecules. That's what heat is. It's just a vibration. It's a faster vibration, you get a stronger heat. So you're probably starting to see now that if our solar system was moving into an area of the galaxy that had a higher energetic concentration, that you would also expect that there would be more heat and hence more energy and brightness showing up at the front end of the solar system, and that's actually what was discovered. Now, that's one level of the mystery. Another level, apparently, is that the Russians and the U.S. have been privy to contact with people who are not of Earth origin. We're starting to get away from using the term extraterrestrial and getting towards the term people because, in fact, as the data has continued coming out from whistleblowers who are leaking their information from the inside, we're learning that very few of the ETs actually look like the typical gray. That's an anomaly. The vast majority of people out there in the universe, in this particular galaxy at least, who would ever visit us, look almost exactly like we do. And they may have differences in skin color. Some of them are only about a foot and a half tall. You have all different levels of height going up to approximately 12 to 14 feet tall. And we've gotten multiple confirmation on this. There can be as many as 57 different varieties of human so-called extraterrestrials. And Larry, I mean, for me, I feel cheated. It actually upsets me to have learned this because we are being conditioned by people who are in power through various media channels. And of course, they're not responsible for every movie, but there's been a lot of movies financed that create this xenophobic attitude that anybody who's not from this planet is some sort of horrible reptilian or octopus-looking thing that's very malevolent and dangerous and is going to hurt us.
Right. And it's all fear-based. They're going to present a bunch of fear to us. And because humans are naturally attracted to fear for whatever reason, until they evolve to the point where they can understand that fear is nothing. Fear is nothing. It's just an attraction to something that's not there. False evidence appearing real. Fear.
Exactly.
And so when they present that fear to us, the majority of the people who are not awake yet are the people that are used to turning on the televisions and just having information fed to them without questioning what that information is. They're going to believe that. And it's unfortunate. So it's a good thing that people like you and others like you are presenting the truth for the people to hear and make intelligent decisions for themselves about what's going on.
Tell us a little bit about that dream you had this morning, because I think that dream was given to you. And I'm specifically talking about the part where the whole illusion broke down and you kind of broke through in the dream.
Okay. In the dream, what happened was that I found myself in a home with a mother and a little child. And I was aware of the fact that I was in the wrong time, that my time was much later, but I was placed back in time with this family and the mother and the child. The child knew I was not of this time, and the mother did not. I told the mother eventually that I was not of this time, that I was here just visiting, and then she promised not to tell, but then she ended up telling.
Now, everybody, let's just specify, first of all, that this is not something that you actually believe in a physical sense, that you're like some sort of guy that teleported here from the future.
No, not at all. Okay. This is a dream.
Right.
This is simply a dream.
I just want to make sure for the people out there, they're going
to... Right, no, this is just metaphor. So you just have to listen to this as a dream and treat it as you will. Shortly after that, I was at a party. There were many people at the party. Most of the people there were asleep. In other words, by asleep, I mean they were doing things mindlessly, having drinks, talking to people, whatever. They were absolutely not paying attention to what was going on. However, there was one gentleman between 30 and 40 years old that was sitting at a table, and my eye caught him. And I went over to him, and we instantly started to communicate nonverbally. Now, what he conveyed to me was that this is all an illusion. It's not real. And as soon as he said that, I remembered that that was true. And I broke down and I cried, not tears of sorrow, tears of happiness. Thank goodness. None of this is real. It's just an illusion.
That's right.
So the Course actually teaches us that same thing, that this is all an illusion.
There's only one of us here.
There's only one of us here. That's right. There's only one of us here. One appearing as many. It's an interesting dream.
And then after reality broke down, you had some pretty phenomenal stuff start to happen.
Right. What happened was, is then the next scene in the dream was I was underneath a tree with my motorcycle. I'm a Goldwing rider. I love to ride Goldwings cross country. They're fantastic. And I do this as pleasure. But I was underneath this tree and my Goldwing was stuck in the mud. Now, this is an 850-pound bike. So it's not something you can just pick up and get it out of the mud. It was completely covered with dirt and I was trying to clean it up. And as I was cleaning it up, the thought came to my mind and I remembered that, hey, this is not real. This is my dream. I can change this dream. And so I instantly thought, well, this bike doesn't have to be stuck in the mud. And as soon as I thought that, the bike was out of the mud, clear, completely clean, pristine. I walked over to the bike and then I started riding the bike, but I didn't ride the bike on the ground. I rode the bike in the air. I was flying above the city.
Now, if the bike is a metaphor for the fossil fuel economy.
Isn't that interesting?
Well, this is what I'm starting to think about. The topic is everybody's so concerned about the election and what's going to happen because it's pretty darn obvious that there's a major effort by the Rockefeller cartel to get McCain to be president because he's going to follow the same policies as Bush has been following.
Right.
And if you are bothering to read what's going on, you can see that Obama is not in the hands of the power elite. Now, again, I've taken a hell of a lot of bullets for this. People get really upset. It's only about 2% of my audience. I get maybe one or two hate mails a week, but they are coming in occasionally, and they can be very mean. I just want to point out to people, there was an article that came out earlier this week, you can go look it up, about Lady de Rothschild, who was expressing that she had financed Hillary Clinton's campaign, and it sounds like there was a large amount of financing involved. And of course, Rothschilds are the European faction, which does not have as much access, if any access, to the special access projects relating to UFO back-engineered technology. That's the Rockefeller side, whose money was made by oil. Essentially, when you go back in history, the Rothschilds set up the Rockefellers. The Rockefellers were originally a subgroup within the greater New World Order, and they ended up actually making so much more money from oil than was anticipated that by the time the first UFOs crashed in Roswell in 1947, and there were other crashes before then, but that's really when the cover-up ensued to its full extent, where you have this open acknowledgement in the media that a flying saucer or flying disc had crashed, and then a couple days later it goes up into a cover-up. Well, there's many, many people coming forward saying that's true, and this includes now one of America's great heroes, the Apollo astronaut, Edgar Mitchell. I mean, what did you think, Larry, when Edgar Mitchell first came out with that statement? It blew my doors off. We've been waiting for this for so long.
I was so happy to hear that. That should have been main news on CNN. It should have been on every nightly news. It should have been everywhere.
Every night.
Instead, was it even on TV?
Hardly at all. He was talking on this obscure little radio show called Kerrang, which was some heavy metal magazine my little brother used to have when I was a kid. And now they've got a radio show. And so it was just some obscure little gig. But when he said this stuff, for whatever reason, the British media went totally nuts with it. BBC and everything. They were all over this stuff.
But you know what else is going on is that the people are so asleep, many people are so asleep, that the first thing they think of when they hear that is, oh, he must be crazy or something must be wrong. We are so conditioned to think negatively about the possibility of the existence of extraterrestrials that when truth is presented to us, we immediately say that's bogus.
And even to the point that you have Larry King putting out whole entire programs repeatedly in which he's bringing out high-quality witnesses who are giving irrefutable testimony, and then you see the skeptics try to attack him.
Right.
And the skeptics come across, at least the ones I've seen, the shows I've seen, extraordinarily full of themselves, arrogant, egotistical.
Right.
Their arguments simply don't hold up against what they're being presented with, and they use character assault as the primary means of attack.
Right.
And to me, if you're going to attack an American hero like an Apollo astronaut, then who the hell is left? I mean, that's the top of the pyramid as far as not the Illuminati pyramid, but in terms of like public relations and somebody who actually could deliver this message.
Well, nothing is sacred anymore.
Yeah. Already, if you have somebody like Charlie Sheen come out and try to speak up against the war, well, he's just an actor. Actors are supposed to pretend. They're not supposed to do anything. Except for the fact that Ronald Reagan happened to be president and Arnold Schwarzenegger happens to be governor of California. But no, actors are not allowed to be that person. And now you've ruled out Apollo astronauts. What other major public figures in America could actually get this out there? So there's this sort of dawning realization in the public that the media is lying to you insofar as it's not telling you the whole truth about what actually is real. And yet, I know that the reason why so many people listen to this audio blog and read my website is that this reality that's being constructed around us is extremely convincing. And the simple fact that something as monumental as the Apollo astronaut Edgar Mitchell coming out and saying all this stuff, just going under the radar, and that there isn't this public outcry, this huge uprising of people saying, why are you people not talking about this? That in and of itself just shows something that's akin to a discovery made by a pioneer in psychology called Hans Seligman. And Seligman did a rather barbaric experiment. Here he has two rooms with a small little wall that's about maybe 3 feet high between the two rooms. And either room has an electrical floor, meaning it's just a wire mesh that can be electrified. And then he puts a dog in there, and he electrifies the mesh under one side of the room. The dog gets shocked. It's very painful. He jumps over the little wall, 3 feet tall, to get to the other room. Then you let him cool down for a little while, and then you shock him, and he jumps back over to the first side. And you let him cool down, then you shock him again, he jumps back. So he gets the idea that he can jump over the wall, and the shocks will be avoided. Now, what happens is, if you change the game, and then you start turning on the juice so that regardless of which way he jumps, to one room or the other room, that the electricity stays on, then what will happen is, the dog will actually lie down on the wire mesh and be completely jolted and electrified, and as soon as he starts doing that, you can turn off the other room and never turn it back on, and because he believes that he's now helpless, he doesn't even ever try to get up or do anything to help himself again. And it's as soon as he lies down, I mean, as soon as he actually gets into that position of surrender, you can turn off the juice and well, he's done.
Isn't it interesting our news media presents all this negative stuff to us, and then the natural reaction is, it's hopeless. Why do anything?
Exactly.
Because it keeps us in the mode of being receptive to whatever they want to present.
But let's look at what your dream was saying, because your dream is saying, when we realize that this is all an illusion, and one level of that awakening, which is very powerful, is waking up to the reality that this whole little stage-managed media universe that we have around us is fake.
Mm-hmm.
Then, in and of that realization is the fact that, okay, if this is all fake, then what the hell is the truth that they don't want us to know? There's got to be something, right?
Well, the truth is, we are powerful too. And that is something that's kept under wraps from everybody.
And why do you think that would be? I mean, I know the answer, but...
Well, the reason is because as long as you can keep somebody else believing that they do not have power, then you increase your ego's belief in that it has power. So I am better than you. It's the whole separation played out in physical form.
We also know from research into torture that when you keep people in a state of fear, they are very easily controlled.
Yes.
Because they are looking for an alpha male. They go back to an instinctive animal level reflex where they basically expect someone else to come in and take charge and clean up the situation for them. And in fact, as we start to get into consciousness science, I am extremely excited. And Larry, I don't even know if you and I have talked about this yet. And certainly I haven't with any of you listening, except if you went to the Dowser conference. I found a brand new scientific study that has dazzled me because I knew that there was this propensity for people to have perhaps up to 50% of their physical health determined by vital energy. Hmm. And what I mean by that is that you think that your body's health requires certain things. Air to breathe, obviously, a little sunlight for the vitamin D in your skin, or you can just drink milk if you're into dairy products. But certain things need to happen. You need to have water, you need to have food, you need to have sleep, or else your body isn't going to function correctly. Well, there was some research done by a scientist who was a contemporary of Sigmund Freud. And when I spoke not too long ago, south of LA, at the Mind Body Spirit Business Network, there was someone in the audience who cited a study from a scientist who was a contemporary of Freud, and I've been hoping that this person will contact me and tell me who that scientist was, because we have it on video. So if one of you people out there has the video from that event, which was just on a little handheld camera, single static angle, probably without very good miking, but nonetheless, if you have the name of this guy, I need to hear it, so please email me with that. dwilcock@divinecosmos.com, or you can just go to the contact page on the website, divinecosmos.com. Now, why I'm so excited about this and I need to know this guy's name is this is a scientist, a botanist, who actually went through and studied the method by which plants are actually being healthy and alive and found that up to 50% of what made plants alive could not be explained or accounted for by any of the conventional methods that the plant takes in nutrition. That means photosynthesis, that means water, that means sunlight, the respiratory process where it actually takes in carbon dioxide and spits out oxygen, which is very good for us. All those things aside, there's still 50% of the plant's vitality and energy coming from nowhere. And we don't have any explanation for how that's happening. And then you look at all these studies that have been done for basically at least 50, 60 years, where people put prayerful intention or a healing intention towards one plant and not another plant, and the plant that they put the intent towards grows much, much faster than the other plant.
Emoto's messages from water is another example.
Absolutely. You have, in that case, a situation where people who have prayed over a particular water, sent their intentions to it, caused that water, when it has been frozen and then slowly reheated, to form ice crystals as it's slowly being thawed out under a microscope. And the ice crystals are quite beautiful when the prayerful intention has been given. And when it's not given, as the ice thaws and then is heated and starts to form crystals again, they don't even look like crystals. It just looks like a glob of junk.
Right. Looks really deformed. Well, it sounds like you've hit on the reason why the media would want to keep us ignorant and keep us believing a certain way. Because as you have more people believing in a particular way, then it perpetuates itself.
That's the setup that I'm going for here, yeah, because I just found a brand new experiment, and this guy's name is Berkalov. You can go look this up. It's B-U-R-K-A-L-O-V. And he did a fascinating experiment. He takes fish eggs, and he puts them in two rooms, and there is a permeable window between the rooms so that the fish eggs are in optical contact with each other, meaning they can see each other and light rays can pass between the rooms. Okay? Now, if you have a bottom room and a top room, just so you can see this, let's say you have a piece of paper, you divide it in half, you get a room on the bottom, a room on the top, and you're diagramming this. Let's say that the first time you take in the top room fish that are slightly older in their larval development stage than the fish on the bottom. The embryos are a little further along, maybe a week, not too much more than that. Well, what he found was when the fish on the top were a little bit more advanced, the fish on the bottom suddenly had an amazing growth acceleration. and they substantially sped up how fast they were growing, while the other fish seemed to kind of stall, I guess. I mean, they continued growing, but nowhere near at this rate. And so what happened was that the other fish that were originally smaller and not as far along caught up to the fish on the top. But what he also found, this is the more sinister aspect of the experiment, is that if the fish on the top were, let's say, several weeks more evolved as embryos, so that they have differentiated heads, or, and I'm not sure what the time frame is on these embryo developments, I'm just saying these things hypothetically, but of course it could be a lot faster, it could all happen within a few days, I'm not sure. But the point is, when the fish on top are more developed, meaning that you got like an egg sac with a head and an eye and a mouth popping out of it, which is one of the stages, and then on the bottom you just have egg sacs without any heads on them, then what happens is the fish that are more developed will actually soak some kind of energy out of the fish that are weaker. And the weaker embryos actually begin having birth defects, growth retardation, and death. So that, in fact, the more powerful fish are actually absorbing the very energy that their bodies need to stay alive from the weak. And this, to me, was like the huge eureka aha moment, because I've been waiting for some scientists to come out with a study like that. Because what do you think that tells us about the alpha male in a herd?
He has a reason to stay in that position because he's going to feel better. He's going to be more healthy, more vibrant, maybe even live longer.
The strong absorb energy from the weak.
Exactly.
And the weak, when you go into a state of fear, your energy field is actually spilling out vital energy, which through a basically black magic kind of thing, the strong absorb the energy of the fear. And I always knew this was true. And we also even have DNA evidence. And I think everybody remembers this from my website. And we talked about it in the Science of Peace to some degree. So if you're interested, you can get that and hear a lot more about this. But here's a scientist named Dr. Glenn Rhine, who takes undifferentiated DNA, meaning that it's just DNA from a placenta. It hasn't turned into any particular kind of cells yet. So it's like stem cells. And he has it in a tube. And then he hands you this tube, and you send your loving energy to the tube. You're basically holding the tube and thinking thoughts of pure love, and you actually, it's very important, you have to have the emotional rush. You have to have the hormonal rush of love, like almost an erotic stimulation. But when you do that, if he had heat fixed the DNA, which is what they term it when you kill DNA, a dead DNA is a DNA that's unraveled. It's basically unwound and fallen apart. He found that the energy of love actually grabs that DNA and twists it back together and brings it back from the dead. It's actually now alive again.
Wow.
Even though it was dead. But what's even more fascinating than that is that you can take another sample of DNA, and remember, this is DNA from somebody else's body. This is not your own DNA. This is somebody else's DNA. So you could be standing next to somebody else in person and do this. Somebody else's DNA, and you get angry, and you get really aggressive, and you have the adrenaline glands fire off, and you have that surge of rage. Healthy DNA is actually destroyed. Your anger absorbs some kind of vitality or life force out of that DNA and destroys it. And so this is what happens with somebody that is an aggressive person who's trying to attack and confront. When you're attacked and confronted by an aggressive person and they get that response from you where you have a sense of fear and you just are shocked, in that moment of shock, you notice how you feel kind of like you're wilting, like your posture changes and you just sort of fold up. Well, it's like there's some sort of energy coming out of you. Now, here's the good news, right? The good news is that all of this stuff that I'm talking to you implies that there is a scarcity of this energy. What are we talking about here? What kind of energy? What's the brand of energy that we're talking about? It's free.
Mm.
It's free energy.
Yes.
So there is no lack. There's no loss. If you feel that you're losing energy, all you have to do is get time to breathe and you can build it back. So even if you're in a situation, many people listening will be, where there's somebody in your life, perhaps it's a parent, perhaps it's a spouse, perhaps it's a family member of a brother, sister, or it's an employer, a boss. But if there's somebody in your life who has this aggressive rapport with you, and you feel yourself start to wilt, you can always just tell them that you need some time alone and you need to go outside, take a walk, get a breath, or do something. And in that moment, you don't lose any energy. You build back the energy that you have. What they, meaning, of course, New World Order types, don't want to happen is they don't want to ever let the public get that time to breathe. Because when we rebuild our energy, we see through the veil of the illusion. Mm-hmm. And then in your dream, Larry, the bicycle representing the current economy, right, which runs on oil, mm-hmm. suddenly becomes what?
It's unnecessary.
Yeah, but you're stuck in the mud, and then when you realize that it's all an illusion, your bike is transformed into some other form of propulsion.
I just had to change my mind, and it was immediately changed.
That's right. I mean, I think that because we knew we were going to do this blog today, this dream was given to us not just for you, but for everybody. Mm-hmm. I think your dream talks about what everybody's going through and what we're all experiencing.
And it's unusual for me to get a dream that's that vivid.
I know. This is the first time you've ever talked to me about a dream right. in that detail. Uh-huh. So I think that the bicycle levitating and being suddenly out of the mud, I mean, everybody feels, most people feel right now as if our society is stuck in the mud, as if we can't move forward. There's a lot of trepidation about the idea that another 9/11 or false flag event will happen prior to the election to try to throw things into chaos. Anybody who's monitoring these kind of websites has seen multiple insider leaks talking about the idea that sometime in October, that they, whoever they are, have scheduled some sort of major, major disruptive type of event in society to try to throw things into complete chaos. And I believe that the Georgia conflict may have been what was hopefully intended to do that. Because, Larry, do you remember how when that thing first happened, that everything in the media was all, mm-hmm. oh, my God, World War III.
That's exactly right.
We got this international incident where everybody's in China and all the countries are together. And could they have dissolved the Olympics? Could they have had diplomatic breakdowns? Could they have had Russia threatening nuclear war? This is all the kind of stuff that happened. When, in fact, what you learn on TBR News is that Putin had advanced knowledge from leaks that this Georgian president was going to do this invasion. So the Russians were all lined up right on the other side of South Ossetia. They had camouflaged the tanks, camouflaged the troops. And even these guys were so ignorant that the Russians were actually shooting down unmanned aerial drones that were trying to find out where any threat was. And even though the drones were shot down, they didn't realize that there's this gigantic military machine just waiting for them to do something stupid. Mm-hmm. So that's why the whole war was over in one weekend. Mm-hmm. I mean, it started and then it ended. I was at the Dowsers conference, mm-hmm. and one minute I'm just dealing with the airplane and I'm dealing with this amazing place in Vermont where the water that comes out of the tap is like pristine bottled water, better than 90% of the water you buy in the store. And oh my God, we're at war. So I want to just put on the record that I have had a dream myself that said that these plans are in place for October, but that the disruption is going to be much less than what was planned. And this gets into the idea, and we talked about this before, of complex adaptive systems. And that means you look at it like a sand pile. You have grains of sand falling into a pile. And then what happens is they look at the pile and they discover normally you can plot out where every single grain of these millions of grains is. You know where it is and you know where it's going to move. When the pile gets ready to collapse and it reaches a peak of instability, there's a sudden moment where you can no longer predict where any particle is going to go. It's completely random. Soon after that moment, there's an avalanche and the pile restructures to what's considered a higher level of order, a higher level of complexity. And that means it has self-evolved. It is self-organized is the term. And it does so without any higher authority. It's just a basic law of physics that as things destabilize, they then restructure. But what we now know is that they can restructure around single agents within the system. There's no longer a need for any type of established power structure to try to stage manage how these things are going because they no longer can. And Larry, I think the proof of that is in the internet. Mm-hmm. I've talked about this before. Let's look at, for example, Craigslist, right? You have this one guy who builds a website, and he's blown out everything about classified ads in the newspaper. And now you're listening to this thing called Pandora. That could be another one. I mean, it hasn't really caught on yet, but...
Oh, it's phenomenal. For those of you who don't know what it is, it's Pandora.com, P-A-N-D-O-R-A.com, Pandora. What this website allows you to do is listen to free music. But what's special about this is that when you go to this website, you can enter the name of a song that you want to listen to, and then it will play that song and then other songs that are similar to that song. In other words, let's say you like the Beatles. All right. So you put in the Beatles, it starts playing Beatle music. Well, it will then start putting other groups in there that sound similar to the Beatles. Now, that's a revolutionary idea.
It's like artificial intelligence in your iPod.
It's fantastic, because what that also means is that you no longer have to have a record label or a record company to be in direct competition with other artists that have had major labels. So if an artist sounds similar to Joni Mitchell or whoever, fill in the blank, they will get the same amount of exposure as somebody who has a major label. There's a direct link on the site when you hear a song to be able to click that link and then purchase directly from the artist. This is a revolutionary idea.
So what would somebody have to do? Because we have a lot of musicians out there and they're all making music and they're making some really good music. I mean, I'm getting so many submissions every week of music, I can't even listen to it.
Just go to Pandora.com and near the bottom, there's a contact and an FAQ. Read that. There is an email address that you can send your material to, or at least get an address where you can ship it to. They are actively looking for artists that do not have record labels, because they are continuously improving and increasing the number of CDs that they have in their catalog. It's called the Music Genome Project, where they go through and listen to each song and they categorize what characteristics make up that particular song. And it's stored in a database. And that's how they're able to give you the material that sounds similar to other things. They have humans listening to these songs, categorizing these songs.
So this is not some algorithm. This is actually based on...
No, these are real humans.
And people that actually listen to everything and actually are judging based on any...
Right.
So what kind of criteria? I mean, how do they...
They were just here in Austin a couple months ago, and the president of the company was here and gave a really nice presentation about that. He said that there's about 1,000 criteria that they go through for each and every song. They have 50 full-time employees that do nothing but listen to music round the clock to categorize the songs.
That's quite a job.
Yeah. Currently, they have somewhere around 100,000 songs categorized, and they're looking for more all of the time. Now, there's a very important thing that I think the listeners should know about. This new idea and this concept of Pandora, as great as it is, could go away if the RIAA are the people that control these rates for the monies that are paid to artists is not change to be more fair. Currently, XM Radio has to pay roughly 1.5 cents per song to play music.
That's royalty fees to the record label.
Correct. And to the artist and whoever is involved getting that. Pandora and any other internet-based radio has to play almost twice that. 1.5 to 2 times that. So the rules are not set up fair for people like Pandora. So I
urge you... Why don't they just raise the price, though?
Do I know?
Why wouldn't Pandora just raise the price of subscription?
Well, there is no... It's totally free.
It's not... Oh, my gosh.
Pandora is totally free, and it's ad-supported.
So, wait, you're saying that people can listen to free music?
Yes.
And they don't even pay for it?
No, they don't have to pay for it.
And the stuff that they like if they want to listen to the Beatles, they can hear the Beatles?
Yes. Continuously.
And they're not even subscribing?
No.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a fantastic thing, and Pandora is establishing itself as a giant in the industry when it comes to that kind of internet radio. But if the rates are not configured to be fair across the board for stations like Pandora and XM, we will see Pandora go away. So I think it's a good idea to contact RIAA and your congressmen, your legislators, and let them know that, hey, you want to see Pandora continue, because that's a good thing they're doing.
Well, and the point, too, is that we have about 3,000, 4,000 people listen to these audio blogs within the first 2 or 3 days of when we do them, at least, and that number keeps growing. Mm-hmm. And if even one out of 100 would actually take the time to write a little letter, if they listen to Pandora and if they get into this and start liking what they're hearing, that number alone, 300 emails, is big. I mean, it might not sound like a lot, but I remember back in the day when I was at the Disclosure Project conference, and this was in 2001 with Dr. Stephen Greer, where we had 39 witnesses to top secret UFO classified projects, and they were coming together in the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. to testify before the media and before members of Congress, saying that they would be willing to make congressional testimony to the reality of what they went through in these classified projects, including guys that had handled the wreckage from crashed alien disks and actually interacted with the beings who had been inside who were still alive and telepathically communicated with them. This is just one of many things that was talked about. Now, one of the things that happened was, because I was a fly on the wall, I actually was an invited VIP because I'd been on Art Bell, and I was able to get in. I made a donation of $150, and I was able to get a seat at the second event, which was the post-conference VIP event for the members of Congress and everyone else invited. It was a relatively small gathering, and we got to talk to several people who were working within Congress and the legislative system, and they were saying that even 20 or 30 emails directed to a particular office that come in on a fax machine. Actually, that's what they said. They said faxes were better than email. If it comes in on a fax and you get 20 or 30 faxes within 1 or 2 days on one subject, it becomes a huge issue because they know that that represents like 0.01% of the number of people that have that opinion. We've been enjoying Pandora when we've been driving, because we've been working in the recording studio. We've been driving to and from various restaurants because we're too lazy to eat at home, I guess. And we have the money. Right now we do. At least we're pretending that we do.
Well, it's nice to get out of the studio. You know, you've been here all day.
Yeah, you got to get out of here and cleanse your ears. So anyway, we're going out there and you've been playing this stuff.
Yeah, it's on my iPhone,
it's
which
phenomenal.
Is a great thing.
It's phenomenal. The idea that you can, and you there's channels and stuff, right? Isn't that part of it?
You can create your own radio stations and it's totally free. When you go to Pandora.com, you just enter an artist and you create as many radio stations as you want. Like, for instance, today, you and I listened to Jean-Luc Ponty.
That's right.
That's right. So I had created a Jean-Luc Ponty radio station, and on my iPhone, I connected it to my car stereo, clicked on the Pandora application for my iPhone, and it just streamed music that sounded like Jean-Luc Ponty the whole time we were traveling.
Oh, and some of that stuff was just killer.
Oh, it's phenomenal. What's great about this, David, is that no longer does somebody else decide what you're going to listen to, when you're going to listen to it. It's changing radio to be you listen to what you want, when you want. And that's the big paradigm shift. The listener is in control of what and when they listen to, as opposed to big radio telling you what and when you're going to listen to it.
And I think what that does, too, is it means that if you have production value, that in and of itself becomes its own democratic process. I've been researching viral video, and what's turning out to happen is that the videos that have a high production value are still ending up being seen much more reliably by much larger numbers of people because people like to be exposed to something that's of good quality.
Mm-hmm.
So if it seems as if there's no point in doing your own thing because there's so many people out there putting out material of their own, the bottom line is that if you do something really well, it still rises to the top and it still makes a difference. And I really feel, again, and I don't want this to be too self-serving, but I really feel that what you and I are doing with this music right now, both of us are enjoying what's coming out and it's sounding like some of the great stuff that we've both listened to.
It's really an amazing process. The quality and level of writing that's going on right now is inspirational. And even though it's not inspirational music, it's just phenomenal.
And we've both wanted to be involved in something like this before. I mean, Larry, you've worked for, you said 500 signed artists?
Well, there's 300 listed on my website. There may be that many that I've worked over the last 36 years, but
right.
There's several hundred people I've worked with.
That's huge. And so you've done some of your own music, and mm-hmm. we used some of that pre-existing body material in Science of Peace that
right. I sure did.
One of the bonus CD-length MP3s is called Elixirs for the Human Heart.
Right.
Just briefly tell us, where were you in your head when you composed that? What was the circumstance? Because it's a really gorgeous album, and I'd like to hear just a little bit about that.
Well, I made the record with the intention of it being a healing experience for the listener.
Mm.
That was the intent from the very beginning. So when I composed the material for that project, I went into a meditative state and got quiet, got still, and I listened. And what I heard, I played. And if I didn't hear it, I didn't play it.
Hmm.
It ended up being a 63-minute piece
hmm.
with 17 different movements that morph from one to the other. And it's a very relaxing, meditative experience. It's wonderful.
17 movements. So that's basically like 17 songs.
Right.
Right. And we only use some of those in Science of Peace. And this is just one of five CD-length MP3 files that you get in our download.
Right.
Now, are we safe to talk about the high def that we're planning?
Well, sure. Why not?
Okay.
This HD version we're talking about will be a much larger download. It will be a double or more in size to download it. But
so we're probably going to have to break it up into chunks or something.
Well, yeah, well, we'll do that for sure. But it will definitely sound better. It's a higher quality version of the Science of Peace.
What we're doing actually for this new project is really something that's never been done before in music. Why don't you just explain a little bit about what that is? Because I really do think I'm going to be doing concerts and we're going to be performing this stuff, and it's going to be something that will utterly, totally change how everybody sees me out there who's following this work. It's huge. This is monumental. Talk a little bit about the concept that we came up with for the album.
Well, the concept for this album is the Wanderer Awakening.
And what's a wanderer?
A wanderer, well, I think it's a person who may be misplaced in time, who finds himself maybe here and knows that this is not his real home.
Like the soul is not coming from a normal place like everybody else's. There's a sort of an old soul.
An old soul sort of implies time, however. And it, you and I have already had this conversation. There is no time.
That's right.
There's only now.
So a soul that's at a higher vibrational level, where that level wouldn't normally require the lessons of third density, meaning where you're choosing between love and control, that level of learning is not needed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Wanderer Awakening.
Yes. This story is presented from the perspective of the wanderer who is awakening, who decides from the beginning, if we're going to think about linear time, in the beginning he contemplates whether or not he is going to leave his home to enter this realm that we call our physical existence. There's some turmoil there, is deciding whether or not he's going to leave or not. And then he makes a decision. He's here. He has experiences. And eventually at the end, then he is going to awaken. So it's a soul's journey from beginning to end.
And what's fascinating about this is that it's everybody's story, too, because
yes.
ultimately we've all done that at some point. Mm-hmm. Wanderers, right. as we would use that term, are people who've had that happen more recently, like they've just recently gone from this higher plane. What does the Course say about that? Are we all just walking around, just living our lives, and only a few people are blessed with synchronicity and special things? Like everybody writes me and they say, oh, David, I wish I had things happening to me like you. Or they say, these strange things are happening to me, I don't understand them, I don't know what to do with it. So what does the Course say about a human being? I mean, who are we? What are we? All right, and on that rather cliffhanging note, we are concluding the first half of this exclusive David Wilcock, Larry Sayer joint audio blog here on Divine Cosmos. We hope that you've enjoyed it. We will try to get the next one out within another week. This will help to ensure that we have content on the site updating so you can feel that you're getting more than just one post a month or something. And we look forward to continuing to have your presence with us. And of course, always want to remind you that there is a very real spiritual transformation happening on this planet right now. We're all a part of it. And the best time that we have is not 2012, it's this present moment. Right now, here, today, you can make choices to improve the quality of your life by improving the quality of your attitude. And as your attitude changes, you'll discover that the experiences are changing. So again, we want to thank you, and we will see you soon.